You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Howdy.
And it's me, Brian. And on this week's episode, we are talking about the anime which aired between Monday the 18th of September and Sunday the 24th of September, with the solitary exception of Bono Bono, of which we are still 13 weeks behind. But maybe next week we catch up a little bit.
Okay.
A couple of things end this week, so.
Oh, I thought things were starting up next week.
No. It'll be the week after. We'll be the deluge, which will begin.
Oh, God.
We call it a gathering storm.
Yes. Thankfully, I did learn that one of the things on my list is on Netflix, so we can safely remove that.
Yeah, until it's fucking all going to be up there at the same time, yeah.
Well, I'm not that excited, so I can quite happily just never watch it, unless I hear how amazing it is.
Well, it'll be on Netflix, so you think, oh, I got nothing better to do, I'll watch it anyway.
Hey, I've still resisted watching Knights of Cydonia, so. Aging. And I like aging manga, so.
Yeah, but aging anime is the blurst.
First up, it is Picotaro's Lullaby Lullaby. And this week it is The Town Musicians of Bremen. Is this a folktale we are familiar with?
Yes.
Okay, it's one I knew the name of, and I don't know if I knew the details.
I think there's like a bunch of different versions of it.
Yeah,
because I knew it as The Musicians of Bremen, not without the word town, yeah.
Yes, so apparently in the normal story, a bunch of animals decide it's better that they go and become musicians rather than be killed.
Yeah.
So as they're on the way to Bremen, in the story they never make it there.
That's the best part.
They spot some robbers counting their ill-gotten gains in a house, and they scare them out of the house by pretending to be a monster. And then when the robbers come back, they scare them a second time. And then they live high on the hog on these robbers' ill-gotten gains.
How does a donkey, a chicken, a cat, and a dog know how to spend money? What it's for?
And apparently,
they can combine like a combining robot to make a super monster. So,
yes.
I think there's a lot of good things in this story.
Apparently, in an earlier version, the robbers were I can't remember which animal, but they were all heraldic animals.
They were a bear, a lion, and a wolf.
Which puts an entirely different meaning to the story. Because
it's
anti-nobility.
Because
it's basically saying, the nobles rob from the common folk. So therefore, you should trick them and take their money from them. Anyway, in this version, we meet the animals. The chicken.
Chicken, cat, a dog, and a donkey.
And a donkey and a pico.
And of course, the pico.
The pico.
The staple of any farmyard.
And the problem is that the pico won't turn round.
Yeah, come on, dude. Get with the program. We're all standing on each other's backs.
You're probably hurting the donkey's neck sitting the way you are.
But it's like a backrest.
Ooh.
Yeah, again, Picotaro just being obstinate and messing up these fairy tales.
Yes. So there's a lot of back and forth, and then the robbers spot them, and then apparently Pico knows the robbers.
Yeah, just making him even more shady than he usually is, yeah.
Just nodding in the window at them, it's like, yeah.
And next week it's Little Red Riding Hood, and I was just laughing at the thumbnail, so I'm hoping
that... Oh, the thumbnail kind of sells you on the episode, yeah.
Well, we already have the thing of him in the bed to begin with, so it was easy for him to do this one.
Yeah, not the strongest one, I thought, but I still enjoyed it.
I still like the back and forth dialogue. I mean, like, I think that's what kind of wins it in this.
And the punchline was really strong, the reaction that, apparently he knows them.
They're friends of his, huh? Is he in on this? Is he here to mess up the animals' things because he's friends with them? I don't know.
We never will. Okay, in Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, they go off to see Oichi. I forgot to take the name of the guy who goes.
The competition for Oichi. Or the diplomat, Fuwa.
Yes, that's the fella. Goes with Chidori to see if she's going to come home.
Yeah, because they're kind of like, wait, she should have been back here by now because the alliance is severed. But obviously, the guys are having none of it.
Yep. And then Chidori leaves with a very brutal message. Basically saying, oh, well, you'll come home once we kill your husband, essentially, is what she's saying.
But then he takes it Nagamasa the other way and saying, well, that just means we just have to win.
And then the best bit is the bit at the end when we get, you kind of see Nobunaga's mask slipping as he contemplates these betrayals he has by younger brothers, even though this is not actually his younger brother by birth.
It's his brother-in-law, yeah.
And I thought that scene was really well done because it kind of, you could just see the thread of his sanity beginning to be pulled away.
Hmm. So eventually we're going to end up with the guy from Drifters, right?
Quite possibly, yes.
Hmm.
I have no idea whether this is ending this season or not. Because I feel like it shouldn't, because there's still loads of stuff in the opening which we haven't got to.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Of guys in the scene in the... Guys we've seen turn up in the opening. We've gotten most of them, but yeah, things need to happen.
Yeah, it's the we've not had the ninjas.
We haven't got any of the ninjas yet, yeah.
I mean, like, that could be just them going like, hey, you want to see all this, right? You better renew us, you know.
Yeah, because I think that's where Chidori's going to have to be drawn between her loyalty to Nobunaga and loyalty to her family.
Mm.
If I remember correctly, from what I read of the history very early on in the series, I think when her granddad first showed up.
Mm.
But that was Ninja Girl and Samurai Master. There were some jokes in there as well. It was a lot of everyone loving Oichi. They'd prepared a welcome home party for her.
Sorry about the divorce party.
Oh, that was it, yes.
Yeah, not quite positive.
And then in Gomachan, it was jealous Gomachan.
I think you mean Shonashibi Go-Go Pillow-chan, Brian.
So, at the start of the episode, Goma is really annoyed at Dad using him as a pillow.
Because he's the best pillow, because he's pillow-shaped. I can't think a seal would be that comfortable.
He's soft like a seal. He's a little kind of harp seal puppy.
I guess they have a lot of fat in them, yeah.
Yeah. Nice and warm. Then Mum comes home with her winnings from the sweepstakes, where she's got a luxury pillow, which replaces Gomachan. Everyone has a go with it. They dream.
Yeah, initially everyone's skeptical, because it's like, it's just a fucking pillow. What? How good could this be? But they all have wonderful dreams instantly as soon as their head touches the pillow.
And as all this is happening, Gomachan's getting more and more jealous of this pillow, which has usurped him, even though he didn't want to be the pillow in the first place.
Yeah.
Bad attention is still attention.
And so he's imagining the pillow going on various episodes and adventures that he's had before.
Yeah, the pillow eating his...
tuna.
What's the sushi he likes? Yeah, the tuna.
Ice pops.
Going shopping,
which is just like, the more they did that, the more I was like, that pillow's going to be gross at the end. And yeah, like you said, the intro to the show just becoming about the pillow.
Yeah,
they got really far into that they were going to go the whole
thought they're going to do the whole thing just with the pillow, because it was like, it was badly put in, it wasn't as well animated as the opening, but they'd done a pretty good job of putting a pillow where there should be a seal.
I can't remember how it ended. I know there's
The pillow and Goma have a wrestling match. Yeah,
he fights the pillow in the wardrobe, but they are enjoying the course that his little seal head grazes the pillow, and he gets an idea of how soft it is. And now he loves the pillow. You can't get it off him. Meanwhile, in Asnikal,
Sigalcon's
teacher has found his own pillow, and you should always assume that when you find anything strange or mysterious in the country of Astrakhan, it's probably some kind of living creature or terror beast. And of course it is, because it's a hedgehog.
Yeah. But the fact that he mistook a hedgehog's quills for a soft pillow, I mean, it just shows how much of a moron the guy is.
Like, when a hedgehog's quills are relaxed and you stroke it the right way, it does feel very smooth and velvety.
Mm.
It's when they're kind of tense and agitated that they stand up and you're pricked.
Like,
when you stick your head on one.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Okay, and then in, I do believe next week there'll be no Gomma Chan again.
Oh. Okay, okay, well, that Miss Double Sugar will be for Bone Up as a Bono Bono then.
Yep, yep. next up, we have, as a final short, Bono Bono, of course, and we've got episode 13, Holes Start Appearing. And in which it's one of these episodes where it's very strange, particularly by
it's
the
a,
end.
It's a bit surreal, yeah.
So there's this area where holes are appearing, and Bono's not sure what they're caused by.
And Raccoon has several theories, which Bono dismisses all of them.
So you go and speak to the smartest adult they know, Wolverine's dad.
Which, is that's not true. Surely that's not the smartest one.
I think it might be.
She's the most scientifically minded. She has inventions and tools and gadgets.
That's true, I suppose, yeah.
And it goes to his method, like, you know, like, there are certain rules in our worlds. You know, if you throw water on something, it'll get wet. If you blow your nose, snot comes out. So we'll have to just, like, apply those rules to this strange area.
Yep, I can still blow my nose here.
Yeah, so basically they're like three positions is that Raccoon is certain that the laws of physics work everywhere all over the world works exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Wolverine's dad seems to be open to the idea that there's the possibility that there are places because he once found a spot in the forest where all the leaves were pointing downwards on the big trees, on the medium-sized trees, even on the little trees. Then he found himself looking down, pointing down as well.
And that was supposed to be told in, like, a scary story kind of
yes.
thing.
Just annoyed Raccoon. And then Bono Bono is certain that there must be, because the world is so big, there must be places where things behave differently.
Hmm.
And Raccoon just gets pissed off, throws loads of rocks at these holes, wanders off. But then the next day, Bono Bono comes back and finds there's more holes. And also, the rocks that Raccoon threw into the area have also got holes in them. At which point you're like, what the fuck is that rock up the tree again?
Do not sleep in that place overnight.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. I was like, let's not spend a long period of time in here just in case.
This show reminds me, every so often there'll be an episode which makes me think of Twin Peaks.
Yeah!
Yeah,
I'm thinking Twin Peaks, maybe X-Files a little bit, but it's just some weird thing. It's not like a very ostentatiously weird thing. It's just, this doesn't seem quite right. It's a bit off, and it's really unsettling me.
It's not something that should bother your day-to-day, but it is not normal. Yeah, there's things like that in this forest. So.
We've got to be worried when they find like a small pool of oil surrounded by some small trees, then they were fully into Twin Peaks territory. Okay, and also first final episode of the this week's episode of the talk about Haybot episode 50. So Haybot is a masterpiece after this episode.
Okay, explain why.
Okay, so they had their finale last week, so they double down and have another finale this week. So it opens with a Day of the Dead parody where various characters are trying to figure out what happened to this nightmare world they're living in, where the place is being overrun by the bootleg Haybots from an earlier episode. And so they find a videotape and they watch it and they learn. They're basically watching an earlier episode of Haybot, except, as we'll get to the end, it's the same episode of Haybot that they're in. That Patchybot, the Haybot pillow, the soft vinyl Haybot, and the mini Haybot and Vocabby have decided to take over the show. Because even after they saved the world, Haybot didn't fall in love with Vocabby, so she's decided to forcibly change the entire show. So they go around arresting people and converting them into a form much more palatable for cultural critics of anime. So they turn the entire show into a anime about a boy and his talking ball, which is full of useful lessons for well-behaved children.
So basically some of the other shows we've been watching, kind of.
Where the boy's catchphrase is slammerific. And eventually every anime in the world becomes this show.
What could this be a commentary on?
Then later on, after that's kind of fizzles out, Patchybot then tries to make a adventure show starring himself, which is just badly drawn animatics in marker pen. And eventually he decides to unleash the dimension screw once again until Memico shows up and saves the universe. Now, Memico was a character who would just show up at random throughout the episodes. She's like drawn like a, at least from the top half, she's drawn like an incredibly stereotypical anime schoolgirl, but then her legs are exceedingly long and weirdly drawn. And then the characters in the Day of the Dead parody discover that all these events, even though they seem to be years apart, happened on the 24th of September, and that they are also happening in the 24th of September. And then eventually, and that they're not real, they're just part of a story, and then Shigeru, the brother, eventually explains that everything on the show has happened on Sundays, because they're anime show, which airs on Sunday. And if it ever appeared different, then it was then that was just a fantasy. It's only the real stuff happened on the Sunday. When Haybot and Nejiru point out that there was definitely things which didn't happen on Sundays. And,
so wait, is there an actual continuity to the show then?
Sort of, yes. But now that the show is over, they will have to go to a world beyond Sundays. And the people who watch the show will have to think up their new adventures for them.
So, write your own ending.
Your imagination!
So Haybot says, what, you mean fanfics and stuff? And also Super Robot Wars, because they're in the mobile Super Robot Wars game.
Oh.
They've been added. Nice. So that potential means they might be added to future Super Robot Wars games as well.
Wouldn't that be great to have like your team? You're going to have like fucking Mobile Suit Gundam, you're going to have fucking, or fucking Mazinger Z, you're going to have fucking Evangelion.
Big O's in that,
and
yeah.
Then Haybot. To round out that posse.
Well, yeah, the last week's episode, I would say, what's the song from the end of Evangelion called? Is it Todd?
Comsus through Todd.
Yeah, the lyrics of that fit the end of Haybot better than they fit the end of Evangelion. And then all the characters thank you for watching it, and the show ends.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I didn't watch it, but I heard all about it. It seemed pretty all right, all things considered.
Yeah, the ending makes more sense than the earlier episodes, like the first couple of episodes that I wasn't sure on. And I think overall it was a very good project. I'd say if you like stuff which is a commentary on itself and of the type of media it is, then definitely check out Haybot. But if you're deathly afraid of fart gags, then you might not be able to get over that hump.
There's only so much I can take, man.
Yeah, I think this is the first episode where they do actually refer to themselves as a brain melting anime, which I believe was a commentary on the show early on in its airing.
Okay.
I suppose like now that it's finished, I know what it's actually like and how it turned out, then maybe it's worth watching then.
Yeah.
But that being said, we got a whole season of new, amazing, shiny things coming soon.
That's true. There's 50 episodes of this, yes. And I'd say, yeah, most, and they do vary depending on who's writing them. And that 25th episode probably needs a better translation, or it's impossible to translate. The one which leans heavily on the stand-up comedy. And a lot of the references are lost. But I say, a lot of the references you will get, particularly if you're aged 30 years and older. Because that appears to be the target audience.
That's me.
And then the other ending show this week is Vatican Miracle Examiner, of which I've only seen the start and the end, because when I went to actually properly watch it, it said the site was under maintenance. So I'm going to hand it over to Dwayne and Niall to tell me all about Vatican Miracle Examiner.
Hiraga's brother, Ryota, is on his deathbed in the hospital, and he's just flashing back to this sad, tragic past. Because apparently he's been plagued for most of his life, the young life, by these apparitions of these three hooded figures that only he can see. And they appear to be some kind of harbinger of death or doom on the people close to him. So he's a friend from school, of course, who wants to play with him, and these three guys appear. And he has a vision then that night in his dreams of him saying, hey, you're like, you're your friend is dying, you know, and you go and go visit his grave, and then sure enough, he wakes up the next day, his mother gets a phone call, and it's like, he wrote, I'm so sorry, your little friend Danny, he passed away in the night. And it's like, I already knew that, but it can't be. And this happens to him numerous times in his life. It happens with his mother. Danny's guy has a similar dream.
The motherfuckers in the dream kind of go like, oh, if you're not boarding the board to death, then we're going to take your mother. And he's like, no, please take me instead. And they're like, don't care, I already decided. You know, it's these specters of death are jerks.
And then they're the same guys we saw during Roberto.
Yes.
Fever dream trial.
So it suggests that these are actually a thing and this might actually be a miracle, but that never gets addressed in the episode.
Yes, because we also don't know whether it's just his brain tumor causing him to see these things.
That's the other thing. Yeah.
It's probably it. Well, it's funny that you mentioned Roberto because, you know, as Ryota grows up and he falls prey to his condition, he winds up in the hospital and he... then goes around, he's seeing these, like, it's basically a hospice for dying kids. So he's just seeing the hooded figures hovering around every child there and just passing away.
If it hovers around one kid's bed, he'll pray for that kid. Next day, that kid will be dead. And I'm just like, this is fucking morbid.
It's pretty bad. It was just a list of little things where you see, like, one kid sitting up in bed, you know, reading, like, in this little, like, picture book. And then next day, it's just the bed sheets folded up and the book just sitting there. It was quite poignant. I give this to it, all right. But while he is just kind of hanging around in the library, he notices, he finds this old book with like a bookmark in it. And he starts reading it then, and he's, I'm guessing it's just an old kind of just the way they kind of portray it, but he seems to be just reading the book, but he's it's some guy talking about how he used to be the librarian in this library, in the school library. Mm. And he was some old friend of Roberto's from school.
He was that somewhat gay friend that we keep seeing flashbacks to with Roberto.
Yeah.
I say that because it really plays it up that they're into each other in this, right? That's not just me.
Oh, there are a lot of shots where they are, like, the faces getting really close to each other, you know, and have the hands just, like, gently caressing the cheeks and that kind of thing.
Yep.
But he became friends with Roberto because, you know, he was like, the quiet kid at school who, like, some tragedy had befallen him, but he doesn't want to talk about it.
He's like me. He doesn't want to talk to anyone and has incredible sadness in him.
Just like me, because I also have, like, like a fatal illness that may like take me away any time, but I'm gonna live my life. Well, let my life know, just trying to be happy, and you know, I'm gonna be friends with you. And he had like left a bunch of these like books with bookmarks in them, and on the bookmark he's written like a little kind of code that only Roberto would understand, and it's sort of like because we kind of bonded over our shared love of books, that even after I pass away, I can still converse with him via the medium of literature in this fashion.
It's the way that he can keep having a conversation with him while being fucking dead.
Yeah.
Because Roberto will still be uncovering this mystery of all these books. Assuming lots of people haven't opened a book, it's like, oh, that's weird, a gold bookmark. You know, taking them out. But it is a pretty big library, so maybe not.
It's all some kind of means to sort of convey to Ryota that, you know, it's about, even if you have this kind of ticking timer on your life, it's about what you do with the time left, you know, where you can kind of do something. And Roberto's old friend thought, you know, with time I have left, I'm going to like, you know, try and comfort him and be his friend. And even after I passed away, I'll still be his friend via these books. And then Ryota thinks, well, I prayed for all those like kids, you know, as they were passing away. So, you know, maybe these three apparitions, you know, while they're harbingers of doom and death, maybe I can, they will tell me when someone's time is here, and I can be close to them and comfort them before they pass away.
But it was also that he could pass their last words on to people, because he obviously informs Roberto, hey, there's a whole bunch of books with messages from your dead friend.
Yeah.
And he can do this thing for the person who's died. It's like, hey, they wanted you to know this. That kind of thing, since he knows just before when they're going to die.
Yeah. Anyways, that's all kind of like a strange fever dream, but by running through his his dying brain. But luckily, just as he's starting to flatline, a beautiful doctor priest bathed in light with long flowing locks comes into the room, and wouldn't you know it, he just happens to have like an untested like miracle cure that we know that may just work to cure Vero's condition. And doctors are like, well, don't we normally get consent of the patient or the patient's family? But there's normally yes, but this is an emergency.
Well, also, he said he was sent there by Ryota, so it's kind of like the thing of I have consent, which is why later on the doctor's like, it's like, oh, he said you sent him here, so I figured it was cool. And he's like,
Yeah. Because Ryota wakes up and Joseph, Joseph and his brother is there, and he's like, oh, you're okay, you're all right, it's all right. The doctor relates to him, yeah, this guy came in, this kind of this handsome priest guy, like a Father Julia, I think. And he's like, oh my gosh, this one, what the fuck is he doing here? And then we would also relate to him, oh, by the way, I found this book. It's you're Roberto, right? This is the guy that's got your name on it, or it's mentioned to you. So it's like, my God, it's my old dead friend. I gotta go, guys, see you. And he's out the door.
And he's off crying that he can still talk to his friend despite his friend being dead, or have a conversation in a way with his friend. And they're kind of like, they're sitting on the bench together, and they're like, hey, should we report these miracles to the Vatican? They're like, no, they're too beautiful to be put under the microscope.
Jobs? No way.
yeah.
And yeah,
he keeps missing the miracle that he can see the spectre.
I don't think he tells Roberto who would.
He doesn't because he said it was a miracle. Yes. He doesn't specify who provided said miracle.
Yes, because that's what he was offering him in the previous episode to join. So yeah, I wonder if Julia's got some history with those three figures as well. Maybe he's trying to get revenge on them.
I will beat them.
Quite possibly. Well, that might play into my theory that he's like much much older than he appears. And that's why he's got all those organs hidden in his basement.
He keeps replacing them and shit.
Yeah,
yeah.
And stealing children.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what happened to that child that he took from that woman's womb, do we?
Yeah, that's still an unsolved mystery. We still don't know what the deal is with his brother.
Yeah.
It's like, are you just cloning new ones? What's happening here? I mean, the clones aren't out of above and beyond the fucking thing in this show, so... Oh dear. I still like the kind of as an ending thing. It kind of goes like, yeah, there's a bunch more to do here, but it kind of left itself as like, and the end, everything's wrapped up neatly except for all the stuff that we haven't touched on yet.
I quite like how the main stories seem so far have relied on like disproving a miracle, and yet the one-off stories are like, well, maybe there are miracles after all.
You gotta have faith.
Yeah,
I tell you what I really hated though was the little brother's voice.
He
just sounded far too old.
See, it was the thing of like, I think when he was a little, because he's 10 or younger or something at the start of it, and then by the end of it he must be in his teens or something.
Yeah, I guess he's okay older, but doing the young.
But yeah, they use the same voice for
the young boy
the
as a young boy voice. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's not quite like this. I guess you gotta try and end it somewhere somehow, and you know, you can't really go into another kind of mystery from the books. We only got one episode left, but
yeah, sure.
Besides, I just think it's at its strongest when it's just being completely off the wall with bizarre turns of events. Which have rational question mark explanations?
Totally rational. All based.
Yeah, there was cocaine in the air.
Yes.
That's obviously the fucking solution.
Which, you know, which again, you know, is in the long tradition of people involved in Japan making like in media, like kind of comics, anime, or books in Japan. I have no idea what drugs actually do, because the cocaine does not do that. It does not make you see things. It makes you very hyperactive. Well, it does raise your heart rate, all right, yeah.
Yes, yeah, it wasn't making... That was just the... I think that was... It wasn't making them see things. It was giving them the...
I thought it was making them a bit high, was the suggestion.
I think, yeah, I think it was like giving them like the exhilarated effect of seeing the photo reactive paint. To make them think they'd seen a miracle.
So it enhanced it because they felt their heart rate, racing.
Because that's the same thing he did to his girlfriend.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know, like, you know, the whole thing was...
It's questionable, sure.
That thing, you know, injecting, like, you know, the drugs into the candy may as well have said he'd fallen, like, gave her an overdose of marijuana.
When the new Mythbusters starts...
I want to see more of it so that they say that at some point.
If they when they do this promised reboot of Mythbusters, then you can send it in and say, please, Mythbust, Vatican Miracle Examiner.
Fucking hell.
Can you recreate the miracles?
Like, can you clone a two-headed baby from Hitler's sperm? Can you please confirm this?
Can an entire race of albino people survive underground for 800 years on just eating earthworms and beetles?
Also, could they mine gold effectively?
It took them 800 years to mine it all, so I'm going to guess no.
Does this monkey preservation technique actually work?
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, there's at least a season in there for them of disproving, if not more, because it'll take 800 years to run this experiment.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I want more of this. I know this was kind of like the kind of we're trying to do a nice ending because we're not sure if we're going to get any more episodes. But I was like, yeah, I still really like this show because the batshit fucking insanery. It's totally worth it.
I'm gonna guess
it's nonsense.
Yeah, I'm going to guess the basis of whether it did well will be based on how many more books they sold off the back of it.
Yeah, okay.
I'd buy them.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
I'd buy them, but only just like I could see it. No, I'd buy them, but not read them, because then I just want to watch it through this medium instead.
I wonder if they'd read really well, you know?
They're currently on the 13th volume, came out in July.
Okay. So plenty to adapt then.
Yes. So the next ones would be, they'll be in, I believe, in France, about a priest who came back to life after 3 days dead. In the UK, investigating a vampire. And in America, investigating a ghost house and something to do with the next presidential candidate.
Oh, yes.
I hope it involves Bigfoot somehow. A miraculous Bigfoot came and healed me.
Oh, God, I definitely want more of the show. It's like the first episode really set a very high bar for insanity. The first arc never really achieved that same height again. But
vampires.
But, I mean, like just the tempt of it. It's vampires. Like fucking hell.
Yes, and volume 8 involves Ragnarok and ice wolves.
yes, please.
Righty ho. Next up is Magical Circle Guru Guru, which I thought almost felt like a normally paced anime episode this week.
Yeah, it wasn't as packed as it usually is.
Well, I think it might be as packed. I think the difference is there was only really three locations.
Okay.
So you've got the shops, the bandit camp, and that place where the treasure was hidden in the pyramid.
A bit of the woods in between, I suppose. Yeah. They didn't move to a whole fucking continent in the episode.
Yes. Because we've still got, what do we get? We got the giving out code names, because they've joined the thieves band.
So. Yeah, it turns out they're okay, those guys.
They are, yes. Terrible cooks, though.
I did like the reason he was walking up to them licking his knife is because he was making soup. Oh, it's a soup knife, of course.
And it's weird. Yeah. It's good that it's a rare sighting of the man who thinks he's good at cooking but is a terrible cook. Because normally that stereotype is given to a woman in an anime.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. But then it is the stereotype of her being able to come in and cook better for them.
I think there's some more cooking stuff next episode. What's the thief's name called? The main thief?
Which thief?
The main guy, the head of them.
The cool guy?
Yes.
Mr. Cool Man. I don't know, actually.
I've forgotten his goddamn name, yeah.
I watched this like some
Sly.
Time, like, last week.
Sly, yeah. That's it.
Okay. Do you think he picks all the nicknames and that's why he gave himself a cool one?
Yeah, quite possibly. Yes, because he was giving out... I can't remember what DK and Cookery's nickname is.
Cricket and... it was like a bun or something.
Honey bun.
I remember like at one point he called her by her name and her head turned into like a cake or something. Yeah. I can't remember what it was, yeah.
They're not allowed
the
to use... Go for it.
By.
Yeah. Not allowed to use weird magic.
Because it freaks thieves out.
It does, yes.
They're a superstitious and cowardly lot.
Then a young girl wearing a pot on her head is sneaking around and who's revealed to be the princess who's seeking the thieves' help to recover a magic item.
Well, to steal it and then sell it back to them.
Yes. in order to help bring down... What position is the guy?
Oh, he's not a vizier. Yeah, might be chancellor or something.
So we learn that there's a particular guy in the local government who is driving... He's the reason all the prices are too high, because the shop next to the camp where the little creepy old man who makes magic items is...
Adamski, because we've got too many old men in this. You gotta start giving them proper names.
I forgot his... that was a... It's almost a topical name back in mid-90s, but less so here. I suspect Adamski may actually be as old as this old man at this point. They're the one shop holding out, the shop next door, who won't put their prices up.
They have reasonable prices rather than exorbitant ones, and your man's like, nope, you got to drive the prices up. I wonder if that's to dissuade adventurers, you know, because the adventurers won't come to the town and solve the problem.
True,
if it's too expensive to fucking stay there.
But the item that the old man had built, which detects monsters, went off and pointed at this guy. So we're like,
very dumb looking dad trophy looking thing.
And somebody calls him a rat, so I'm hoping that it'll turn out to be another one of those rat men in the disguise.
Rat man.
They go search for this treasure, they get it, but then the bad guys show up and take the treasure from them. The president of the Dark Magic School and Lun Lun show up at the shop.
You mean the Dark Lady, yeah.
Along with Juju, who Juju seems I don't know if she's tired because she's so far away from her town, or she's tired because she's a kid and she's been travelling so far. But she's very tired throughout the entire episode.
Is she in her trance? Because she goes into those.
That's true as well. Maybe she has like narcolepsy or something.
And they decide they're going to break into the castle, steal back the treasure. And there's like one little scene where Lun Lun sees Sly and she's like making goo-goo eyes at him.
So, yeah, he jumps really coolly on a roof and then kind of looks back and she's like, oh my god.
But, an adult man who doesn't look like a goof.
I mean, like, he did look like a goof at one point in the episode where he walks away really coolly, but his arse is hanging out.
Well, yeah, he managed to resist those fairies.
Yeah, I thought those fairies were pretty good.
They
as
were,
well,
yes.
In the forest. It's like, oh, no, they're perfectly helpful. As long as you don't do any violence, they'll be fine. It's like, here, listen to this one. He's like, I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to use weird magic and kill you.
I thought that was pretty perfect, like. Dear.
I think that was everything.
They're disappointed by the thing where it's not a magic banana. Moon banana?
Banana moon.
Banana moon, okay. Where the banana moon is kept because it's really fucking small. like, that's not that impressive. That's pretty much most of it.
I mean, this is there as well because Nikkei is getting the training and it's like, okay, you gotta be, you know, kind of a cool thief guy, so you gotta like use your wits to get a drop on me. Serious things are happening, you know, where they're facing off against the evil chancellor and his minions, and it's like, you know, if only I have my backup knife, but thankfully I kept in here. This isn't my backup knife at all. It's like, gotcha, motherfucker! I knew I'd get you. Nikkei, this is a bad time for this, so why did you do this now?
He did level up from it, but from the sneakiness. And it's where he's having the face off with the chancellor, and Nikkei hits him in the nuts with a stick. I did like the chancellor going like, "You're gonna fight me with baldness?" when he takes off his hat, because I really wanted to see what that would entail.
And also because us as a viewer haven't seen him without his hat on at that point. So as show, we could easily imagine that, yes, he is that bald under his hat.
It fits within the context, yeah. It's not that mad an idea.
Yeah, this was jolly good fun. And, I still can't believe there's this many episodes again to get come.
Jeez Louise.
It's a different felt slower a little bit because they're gearing up for a big assault on the castle with the combined party now with a lot of different talents. So it's one of these kind of madcap race to the throne room or something like that, and then unmasking the chancellor as a monster, and then probably go somewhere else after that.
I'm going to imagine like the entire castle raid thing was like a several episode deal back in the old thing, but I imagine they're going to try and cram it all into one.
Yeah,
it's about 15 minutes.
It's only half the episode, yeah.
Okay, what should we do next? Let's do Dragon Ball Super, because it wasn't super exciting. We had eliminated this week Jimmy's and Frost, who was also wiped from existence for cheating.
Well, for trying to cheat.
Trying to cheat, yes.
Again, it's trying to remind you, there are big stakes in this. And you thought Frost was going to last a little longer, but it's like, nope, he doesn't exist anymore. Forget about that.
Well, there's a better version of him around here, so he wasn't to ever last too long when that guy's around.
Yeah.
So we get a bunch of Ribrian versus Goku, but the main of it is Frieza pretending to betray Gohan getting wise to his plan, playing along, all in order to trick Frost into being eliminated.
And you have the commentary from the guys and the universe Frieza's from. It's like, Frieza might actually fucking betray him here, because that's totally a Frieza thing. Champa going like, hey, Frieza's on our side now, because he's an idiot.
But they have like put in the mind that, oh yes, Frieza might be trying to survive to the very end, so he gets to make the wish, and he'll use it to kill Beerus.
Or become Beerus.
I thought it was obvious, and I like the fact that it was obvious that Gohan got wise to his plan with like the very first punch.
Yeah, it's the punch, and then just the reaction of both of them, kind of going like, "Oh, we both know what's up here."
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like Frieza making a speech all about working together at the end.
Maybe Frieza's going to do one of those heel turns that Dragon Ball villains are famous for. No.
I know. But it kind of had me wanting. I was like, oh, God. I kind of want him to hang out and have to work together with these guys after this as well somehow.
What, you really think Frieza's going to be held in line by Bulma? She's great, but I'm not
sure. I don't
know,
maybe. Bulma's pretty good. Frieza's just a kind of like dick who's kind of like holding his hand like right next to your face, but not honest. It's going, not betraying you, not betraying you, not betraying you. It's like, gosh!
I did like the thing of him going with Frost as well. It's like, hey, check it out. I can go golden. Can you go golden? No, I can't do that. Can you do this? Can you bulk up really big? It's like, yeah, I can do that one. Ah, cool.
There's one of the things you've got to learn. Don't trust anybody. Back.
What? Kabam, knocked off the stage. dear, because you can see him just going like, yeah, okay, teach me, senpai. What's the dealio?
He's out of here. It's like, what? I'm in the stands, you dirty rat. He's trying to shoot him, and then, nope, he gets squinched. No remarks in the peanut gallery.
Oh, dear.
Righty-ho. Yeah, apart from that, not much else happened. I think we're like 29 minutes into the left of the fight.
Yeah, the last episode, that one just gone, was 1 minute long, but I guess part of it took place over the course of the prior episode, but still, holy shit.
Yeah, maybe it won't be finished by the end of the year.
Well, next week, Jiren gets off his ass.
Yep.
Yeah, he's finally going to do some shit.
I wonder if that will greatly reduce the amount of people in the tournament.
Jiren, like, surpasses all the other guys' records and everything. Because there isn't actually that many guys left. We do get another recap of how many motherfuckers are left.
Yeah.
Yeah. This Jiren has been, like, this whole way through. When You know, in The Simpsons when, like,
the mafia
done fighting the Yakuza on the front lawn. It's like, the little guy hasn't done anything yet.
You know it's going to be cool. Yeah. I've been thinking, it's just like, is he hanging back because he's actually a good guy and, you know, it's very unjust to wipe people from existence by knocking them out. So it's like, okay, I'll do this for survival, but I'm not going to go further if I can help it. I don't know. We'll have to see, I suppose. Might see next week.
Topo and Dispo don't give a shit. They're all spot on about justice.
But Jiren's the best of the best. He's the most justice.
We also learned that Rebrianne wants to use her, if she wins, to wish to become a goddess.
Like, again, that could be like God of Destruction. You don't fucking know.
No. God of Love, I assume, in her case.
Oh. Yeah, that seems to be what she's really into.
Okay.
It's making Goku feel all tingly, I believe he says.
I believe so, yeah. And lots of Goku's attacks aren't working on her as well. So.
So there's some different rules with her, I imagine.
Next up, Welcome to the Ballroom, episode 12. Encounters, or face it, Tiger, ballroom dancing is lame.
I think it would have been better if they kept that new intro for like next week. Because
yes.
it's kind of like, huh, that's so lame. And it's like, there she is in the fucking intro dancing.
You're
and
in
like,
all the promotion images.
I don't know, just at least attempt to make it look like she's not going to be the fucking one of the main cast.
Or was she just saying, that's lame, you're in today? Because I've waited Bob Nuts and go, I've never heard of you before. So you must not be that good.
Yeah, it was kind of the way she was looking down her nose at him kind of thing. It was kind of nice of him admitting it in a new class and everything, just saying it to everyone, and everyone's like, oh, that's pretty interesting. No one really judged him for it besides her.
Yes.
Everyone else was like, and him just freaking out was like, I have never been into anything in my life or admitted to that.
Well, yes. I even told my dad about this yet.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was so pleased with himself that he plucked up the courage to tell everybody in the room, and then she instantly destroyed his confidence in one sentence.
Yeah. It didn't get any better then, because it's the first day of high school, and day one, he's enthralled to the school bullies. It's not even the end of the day, he's already getting them drinks out of a machine.
Yeah, you know how I think you could have avoided that? Like, not going behind the fucking bike shed again.
Yeah, why are you going down there? It's the fastest way to the library.
Yeah, I think you need to take the long way around. Also, the drinks machine is fucked, so he can't even get them their drinks that they want.
I did. I like that touch that it was apparently broken. And it turns out Gaju's going to the same school, and also apparently he's a maniac outside of ballroom dancing.
Well, he's a maniac in ballroom dancing.
That's
true,
but a different sort of maniac.
But no, how threatening were those boys exactly? Because like one of them was wearing like kind of like a pink doggy T-shirt.
He was wearing pink to show how tough he is.
Maybe that's
the other guy
was
currently doing weights. I mean, like that's pretty tough.
It's like JoJo rules where you can wear whatever you want. No, it's not a question. But that's tough.
Exactly.
Whereas Gaju,
but
so
obviously
tough.
You know Gaju can do a flying kick into your face.
And he wears
so,
a hoodie under his blazer.
Oh, what a rebel!
With his hood up, so you don't recognize him, even though you clearly do.
Yeah.
Because of the voice.
There's some nice bits with him, like where he's initially like, you can see he's not exactly a bad kid, because when your man runs off and he drops one of the cans, it's like, hey, you dropped your can. It's like, oh, you keep it. And he's like, wait a minute, it's that fucking, you know. Yeah. And him going the bit later on where he's like, hey, give me your phone number. I'll put it in my phone. And he's really embarrassed about it. It was just, what? We're both dancers. Come on. I don't know anyone in school.
Yeah, maybe with just as shy as Tatara as well. Like, poor Tatara coming into the way of school. I'm going to like have a great day at high school. I'm going to make some friends. Maybe five of them.
Shit, yeah.
Well, that's more realistic than all those anime characters that you go to school saying, I'm going to make 100 friends.
Yeah. It's realistic goals, but it's really lowballing, you know?
They were listening to me last week, Dwayne, because they actually presented some ballroom dancing as a dance in this episode.
I noticed that. Yeah. Like, maybe because we're watching it as a spectator, like them, rather than participating. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you guys were actually just spot on about like adapting the comic as it is you know, it's not going to gel very well with. Maybe trying to make it move to the music. And well, you said about kind of Yuri on Ice, where that was animated to the music, and you know, that was always intended that way, so it seems better. And this is always held up to that because it seems to be a kind of a comparative work, because they both involve no dancing and kind of
they're both a sports anime about a less than masculine sport, or what's considered less than masculine, that kind of thing. There's a similarity there, yeah.
But yes, it's nice, and we kind of get to see. I can't say where a whole routine would work to a piece, and also seeing one of the experts do it too.
Goku
does have some skill to back up. He might not be the best coach, but he is pretty good at this.
Yeah, and he and his partner appear to be sadomasochists.
Well, I think he kind of has the perfect partner because they work very well together. But then off the stage, everyone's like, "Oh, these guys aren't going to last." It's like, yeah, they are. They both kick the shit out of each other because that's how they do.
I like that because she, his partner Chizuru, she won't take any bullshit from him.
Like when he stuck her a headbutt and then she starts digging him with rabbit punches, I was just like, this is fucking a perfect partnership.
And I'm going to guess that's supposed to mirror what partnership he's going to have with the red-haired girl.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess they've kind of went with that as well with your one from... Actually, in this episode as well, where she has a rivalry with her partner, that kind of way?
Yes. Yeah, so...
It's an interesting dynamic.
Also, Shizuku basically lays down the deadline that
that's right, yeah.
He's got a year to get good enough to face her again.
They're not going to leave for another school or country for a year, because she really wants to compete with him, but you got a year to fucking get your shit together, because I got shit to do.
That scene did have some weird shots which looked like they worked better in the comic rather than they did here. Suddenly, it's like she's sitting in the chair, then suddenly she's sitting on the arm of the chair. I was like, there's no transition.
I think it's because they're supposed to have been watching the DVD and stuff, and they've cut that out because we saw those scenes.
Well, no, we got to see some of the dance like that because we heard it with the proper. We heard the actual music they were dancing to when they were watching the DVD, as opposed to when we saw it in the episode.
Yeah, whatever dramatic music for the scene in the episode, yeah.
And Tatara was also going, "Oh my goodness, I'm terrible at dancing."
I feel like an idiot for smiling. God, I suck. Yeah. Well, it's like, dude, no, everyone can see this potential in you. Just need to work harder.
Yeah,
that was the lesson to take from this.
And then the second lesson he gets is Sengoku just says one thing. What does he say? Watch me.
Watch closely.
Watch closely. That's it. And then we see Tatara's real talent of being able to take in massive amounts of information visually.
Yeah, because even his buddy is now his now best friend from school, I suppose.
Yes.
Like, can't pick up on all the things he's picking up, and he's like, "Holy shit, this guy can fucking really take it in." Like, he's spotting shit I'm not even doing.
It was a really cool effect when the Sengoku and Chizuru were in the middle of that waltz, and he was calling back how he was told that, a waltz, you kind of feel like you're kind of gliding across water, and then it's this kind of vision of the whole ballroom floor is being underwater, and even the music has a kind of that muffled effect on it.
The kind of effect they put over them, where they're creating like a waveform with their movement, and that the water is kind of spreading out from the
And also, you get a Shigurui style cutaway, so you can see Sengoku's naked body under his suit.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I didn't need to see his butt, but yeah, I figured he was ripped.
This goes both ways. If you're going to like put the
put
the women in those very low cut gowns, then we have to do the same, at least what we can, for the male cast.
Yeah, and most of what comes of that is him feeling kind of massively inferior. He didn't realize the true extent of how good Sengoku was and how different their level of not skill, physicality, talent, all that kind of thing. There's a huge gulf between it. Yeah.
And then they get mobbed by their fans, and that's where he sees the red-haired girl again. What's she doing here? She said she thought ballroom dancing was lame. Dun, dun, dun. And then we end credits, we see them dancing together.
Actually, bigger than dancing, just talked that you were lame, probably.
I also want to comment, we also see in the opening ending credits, I assume who's the rival for this arc. A guy who looks like he's straight out of a Shonen fighting manga.
Doesn't he have a big scar on his
face? Why is he scar on his face?
He danced that hard.
And see, that's why that proved my point of saying this is more comparable to Dragon Ball than it is Yuri on Ice.
Oh, yeah, no. It's definitely more shonen than Yuri on Ice, which fucking isn't. So, yeah.
It's just got the problem of being anime, you've also expected to stick the music on it. And...
Yeah, but I think this, with the content of this, with the animated dancing that we saw, and this intro sequence and the characters are introduced, I think it bodes a little better.
It seems to like have a better handle on where it's going and how it wants to do it. Just from this episode, they seem, it's not like they're listening to us, but they're obviously, it seems like they're listening to critique or trying to improve themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's again with the comic too. That seemed to listen to critiques and about characterization there. And I guess similarly to people animating it. Yeah, animating it even. May have been trying to create like a smoother kind of flow for the dancing and make it work with the music better. But just based on the intro, even, and that's the way that Tatter is interacting with this with a red haired lady, the dynamic seems a lot more even, because similarly to like Sengoku's partner Chizuru, she doesn't seem like she's going to take any bullshit either.
sure.
And nobody fucking leads me, I'm going to have one lead you. Let's do this together. We're a partnership. It's going to be a lot more equal.
You are exactly spot on with. So it did its job, because that is the plot point coming up. Is indeed that. Righty-ho. I just want to quickly say that Kamen Rider Build is amazing. It's four episodes so far. Yeah. I'm going to say it is, might be the best Kamen Rider I've watched.
Wow.
So, quick story is, an artifact known as Pandora's Box has been retrieved from Mars. And as a ceremony, someone activates it, dividing Japan into three separate countries. The politicians who are present at the Ground Zero have had their personalities altered by it going off, and they know this, and they are still in power, because they're politicians. Our hero was experimented on by a secret organisation called Faust, who are turning men into monsters, and he goes around rescuing other people who've been turned into monsters and turning them back into men. In the first episode, he rescues the one victim who can remember what happened to him, because he himself can't, and the other people are amnesiacs when he brings them round, who's a, I think he's either an MMA fighter or a boxer. So he's on the run. In the very first episode, our hero's declared like enemy of the state because he's helped this criminal get away. And he works with a cafe owner and his daughter and a reporter to sort this out, but by the fourth episode, he's learned that the cafe owner is an astronaut in disguise and has one of the two stolen parts of the artifact plastered into the wall in the underground basement of the headquarters. And so we've seen in like episode, end of episode two, the cafe owner is reading a newspaper report on his iPad, and then he kind of like folds the iPad up and crushes it. So it's like, okay, something weird going on with this guy. And so it ended in episode four going, are you part of Faust too? Why have you got this thing? What are you doing to me? Why are you pretending to be a cafe owner when you're an astronaut? Anyway, it's got a really good pace. The suit design's good. They keep up with the physics theme when he's doing attacks. And the acting is decent to good, which is more than you can expect on these shows. And it's kind of got those traditional Ishinomori themes of evil scientist creating scientific monsters but then having some of them turn on them and fight back. So it's really good. So if you don't mind downloading illegal fan subs of tokusatsu shows, go ahead, because this is a good one to get stuck into. Certainly easier to get into, I think, than X-Aid was, even though I liked X-Aid.
I wonder if they'll ever get any of those Kamen Rider shows up on Crunchyroll or something, because they already have a bunch of Ultraman things on there.
They do, yeah, but that's the other company.
The other company, probably, so they wouldn't want to be on the same platform.
Yeah, if they have a deal with them, they mightn't be able.
But I wonder if any of the other streaming things have kind of come to prominence in the last couple of months might think about along those lines.
Yeah, but the Toei are Toei Stuff, who's here? Are they? Is the Crunchyroll Toei Stuff going through Viz, or is it directly to Crunchyroll, or through Funimation? Or is it going directly to Crunchyroll?
I thought it was going straight to them.
Because obviously they've got One Piece and they've got Dragon Ball, haven't they?
Mm.
Yes.
And they've got some of the older shows. But yeah, so
yeah.
I don't know. But then again, they don't have any of the Magical Girl shows. They're on Netflix. Renamed and dubbed. But So yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I'm sure it is Toei wanting more than Crunchyroll would be happy, because I'm sure they'd be happy to stick that alongside Ultraman. But maybe not for whatever Toei are expecting. Because I'm sure it would not get as much viewing. You could probably go over the odds for Dragon Ball and One Piece, because that's driving a lot of traffic to your site. But anyway, yeah, so if you don't mind, check it out. And then back to things we've all watched. Let's go with My Hero Academia, in which Deku and Bakugo yell at each other through the entire episode.
Like I said out loud at one point, it's like, guys, you're going to have to stop punching each other or you're not going to get through this test.
I was sitting in front of Bakugo, what's your fucking problem? Jesus.
Mm.
Yeah, so this, well, we're supposed to learn this, but we don't really.
We don't really know. It's like, I thought, like, this is going to get to the bottom. I'm going to get, like, we have an idea of why he has this fucking rabid hatred. Rabid being the fucking keyword there for Midoriya, that yeah, he's constantly feels like, you know, like he's being shown up by him, because he was like the big fish in a small pond, but now he's had to rise up, and he did. You know, he did very well in his what, the school sports day. Yeah,
but that's not like that. Because he feels like that was like a cheat, because the main point of that, like the main part of the arc as well for the viewer, was the Midoriya fight, and it's kind of like his thing was secondary to that, you know. It's kind of like he's seen Midoriya progress so fucking far, and it's like, I haven't progressed nearly as fucking far. But I mean, like All Might even puts it, it's like, dude, you're like at level fucking whatever, like in video game terms, you're at a higher level, so you're gonna level up slower. That's just just how that works.
Yeah, well, I get that. Come on, maybe we'll get to the root of that, you know, like, why does he feel this way? Why does he feel so inferior and threatened by him, you know, as because he's he's a pretty solid performer. He's quite well in practical things, explosions and that notwithstanding, and he's not a bad in the exams either. So what's the fucking deal? Is this more about kind of what started him out wanting to be a hero? Because, and they had that kind of same thread where both Midoriya and Bakugo both really admire All Might when they were kids, when they were younger kids. But it's become so kind of split now. Well, obviously, like, you know, Midoriya, he's very fawning, and you know, I'm very like in awe of All Might. But like now, Bakugo sees him as well as how would you describe it?
Like a rival, or
no? I wouldn't say.
I think they say like they call him. I think All Might might call himself it like a wall or something to surpass. It's just another goal for him, like.
Well, yeah, I think also they take different things from All Might. Is that
Bakugo? Yeah.
So Midoriya likes the hope that All Might inspires in people, and whereas Bakugo likes the fact that
All Might could
do everything himself. Yes,
yeah,
he doesn't need help,
and that's obviously what he wants of himself.
Yes,
you know. So he thinks he like, and to be fair, like in terms of exams and like just how well he's done, he seems to be on the top of the heap, but he sees everyone else catching up and he's not accelerating at the same rate there. So he feels like he might be overtaken. I think there's certainly a fear there anyway.
Yeah. But what he's kind of failing to notice there is that people are catching up and thriving because they are helping each other out.
But that's in complete opposition to what he admires about All Might, what he wants for himself. It's the opposite of what the way he thinks a hero should be. A hero should be self-sufficient and not need anyone.
So it's just being a stubborn little bitch, in other words.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think from what we learn past this is there's not anything deeply wrong with him beyond he is just a bit of a dick.
Yeah, his main thing is he needs to learn to stop being a dick. Like, he feels like his entire fucking internship was wasted when your mama's going like, I'm trying to teach you to stop being a dick. You'll do better when you stop being a dick. Like, that's the fucking wall he really needs to surpass, and he's not fucking seeing it.
Because even when we meet one of his parents, you're like, okay, that's still no explanation. Surely you're just parent. You should be a much nicer child.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, like Mineta gets a hard time, but honestly, I have a hard time with Bakugo a lot of the time as well, because he just seems to be just this irrational ball of rage all the time. Well, and it's not...
To be fair, that is the point.
Yeah,
that is the feeling it's engendering. It wants to engender in you because of what's going to happen in the next series when it comes up.
Yeah, like I imagine at some point down the line, like, what's he going to think when All Might, this suspicious guy, when he finds that All Might is dying and he needs help all the time because he's dying?
Probably going to be pissed at him.
What's that going to do?
The first reaction, I would say. Yeah,
but at the same time, All Might hides his friends. He's got
not the closest people to him. Though.
No, but the other people don't know who are the people who knows his identity and his secret. So yeah, it's the cop, recovery girl, Gran Torino,
the school faculty. The principal. Though, they all know.
Do they all know? I don't think they all know that he's dying.
Isn't he sitting in a meeting when he's a skinny dude?
Well, they have seen him that way. Because
they've seen... who's the skinny guy in the stripy suit?
I think that might be what they think, yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I can't remember, but I think a lot of the time...
I guess in this world, secret identities aren't really a fucking thing, so... Yeah.
Anyway, also, All Might really gets into the idea of playing the villain in this.
Oh, he's all for it.
More than anybody else, I would say.
I do like the way they're reacting to him, and they're like utterly fucking terrified. Because it's like, yeah, his power is terrifying, but he's generally on the side of good. But right here, he's like, I'm playing the baddie, and boy, howdy, am I going to scare the shit out of you little fuckers.
It's like all those times that Superman turned evil because he was hypnotized or whatever like that. Like,
that's the worst guy to turn evil.
And so the key to them getting through this is they have to learn to compromise and do both of their plans. Because Bakugo's plan was
running away and fighting.
Yes, yeah. Bakugo's plan was to fight. Deku's plan was to run away. But then as you say, fight while running away,
or fight him to a point that you can get an opening to run away.
Yeah, fight him to slow him down. So exactly, we can run away.
Which is, I think that's the best thing. And Bakugo, like, they come up with that plan on the fly because Bakugo goes at him and gets his ass handed to him. And it's kind of like, okay, so clearly my plan's not going to work, and clearly your plan's not going to fucking work. But, you know, in the angriest way possible, obviously.
Yes. I always get Stain cropping up in Midoriya's thoughts when he's thinking of running away and leaving Bakugo behind.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things All Might is going for. It's like, I know, especially Midoriya, has seen some fucking shit, so I'm not going to pull punches in this. To the point where I'm like, dude, you could have seriously injured them several times.
To be fair, that's what Recovery Girl says as well.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't think he's a good teacher, necessarily.
Well, we know he's not. Gran Torino has pointed out that he's not a very good teacher.
Yeah.
And we also get Stain cropping up at the end when the new recruits turn up to join the League of Villains.
They're all inspired by Stain or that kind of thing.
Which I'm sure is going to go down well. That's pretty much the episode. Midoriya carries Bakugo out, and there's a line in here which betrays the fact that this is in a different order to how it was in the comic.
Yeah,
when he makes that comment about the sign being cuter than it needs to be, when surely he's been watching everybody else go past those signs in the video room. Whereas in the comic, that was the first time he was seeing the sign.
Yeah, and I get what you mean, like the God damn it, why can I never remember his name? The grape Mineta. Juice guy.
Yeah.
Mineta. Like the Mineta thing being like a joke version of that fight or whatever.
Yeah, it's in the comic, that comes the chapter after Midoriya carries Bakugo out. You get him carrying Sunlight Boy out.
But I can see why they wanted to do this as like the big thing at the end of it, you know?
Yes.
It makes more sense series-wise rather than...
Yeah, because otherwise I think the last thing is those two guys getting covered in concrete.
Whereas that was the first bit we saw. Yeah, I think it works pretty good in this kind of order, because it's weird. Like, and I've appreciated that in the sports arc and everything, with like the high point of it isn't the fucking final match kind of thing. The high point was we're already past that by the time we get to the final match.
Yeah.
It does things in kind of an odd order. And that with Stain, like, it's like the big thing is Stain, and then there's a bit of fallout after that.
Yeah.
I kind of like the way it has these, the story peaks, and then there's actually a lot to do afterwards as well. But I think for the show, it worked best to keep this towards the end.
Yeah, I think, because you want something exciting before you get the final bit next week, which is pretty much all talking.
Yeah, set up and whatnot.
Yeah. They're just going to the summer camp now, isn't they?
Yeah, it'll be the very end of next week's episode, I think, will be them going to the summer camp.
Mm.
Yeah. But it mostly seems to be about Shigaraki turning up and kind of putting his arm around Midoriya when he's album and saying, "Hey, buddy, how's it going?"
I think this might be this is the first time we've seen him without the hand on his face, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks weird.
Yeah.
I prefer the hand being there as moving out, even though that's also weird.
Yeah, his face is more creepy without a human hand clinging to it.
Yeah, the next episode is the first chapter where I started reading it regularly. It was the one which got me. I was like, oh yeah, this is something I would need to read.
Yeah, I'm going to hop onto this now when it is done.
Done, I'm going to catch right up.
Probably going to be waiting a while for any more of this to happen, so much better crack into it.
I think there's plenty to do another season. You could do another season straight away of this many
episodes. Yeah, I think there's enough material at this stage.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is there'll still be like a time book and 24 in a way, which will run for a little while. And I want more of My Hero Academia now.
Well, that's fine. Like, after the first season, I was like, I want more of this, but I'm glad they took their time because this season's been pretty fucking solid so far. So, yeah, if they take their time on the next one, I'm happy enough just to make it as good as what we've gotten so far.
Then, finally, Rage of Bahamut's Virgin Soul in this week's episode was called... What was it called?
Rise of Nightmare.
That was it, yes.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes.
Like, I'm worried everyone's going to die now.
I've written that... my very last thing on my notes is end of the franchise. Because apparently company have moved over to a different game and they're, like, importing a lot of the characters and assets from Rage of Bahamut into that game instead of Rage of Bahamut. So, yes, by the end of the episode, I think there's a good chance next episode they may just kill everybody off.
Shit.
Because clearly it's open season on anybody by the end of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
So, before we get to that, though, Kaiser and Diaz try and stop the fighting. They don't have a very good job of it.
No.
Yeah, he's been going around like the whole time just being like paladin. It's like, no, we must not fight.
Can we just talk?
Typical centrist.
Yes.
Well, I think he thinks there's peaceful means to do something.
Let's get down to the negotiating table and sort this out without any more fighting. Lucifer and Azazel show up.
On a giant fucking demon ship. I'm not even sure what the hell that thing was, but I love the way, like, there's a crowd of angels and people and demons, and they all look up going like, woo!
Woo, the old gods! Yeah, old gods.
Yeah, we're sorted.
They point out that the royal forces are having trouble because it's a combined army. They're only...
Yeah, the black knights?
Yeah, they say they're basically only equipped to fight angels and or demons, not all three things at the same time.
It cuts to that bit with Favreau where he took a blast from that thing and it did not take him out. It just sort of staggered him. And it's just like, oh, it doesn't work on humans. And then they theorized that's why Nina and the kid were immune to it because they were part human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting, actually. Yeah.
And then we get the great end of Child Murderer. As he turns child into a murderer.
Like, fuck that guy. Like, the only way it could have been worse is if he died alone in a fucking ditch. Like, I just... Fuck him. What a fucker. He made me so mad.
And, like, he is fucking, like, despondent. You know, his troops have deserted him. And it's like, yeah, fucking good for fucking you, ass fuck. But Diaz turns up and is like, what are you doing, boy? You want to fucking calm down? It's like, Diaz, you've... And then Diaz is trying to help you out. and he's trying to stab him.
Diaz is honestly like trying to talk him down. It's like, dude,
well, yeah,
you're in a lot of fucking trouble right now. He's not trying to kill him,
but also he can't hear what Diaz is saying to him because he's deafened from the
explosions and shit. Yeah, yeah. But I guess Diaz just has that face anyway.
Yeah, because this is one good thing about this is it really makes fantasy warfare look like a modern war zone.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely the impression from it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely what they're going out of the way to make it look like.
Yeah,
yeah. And the modern depiction of modern warfare where it's like war is hell kind of shit. And yeah.
Yeah, because you've got child soldiers, which is hell. It's Alisand, that's the guy's name, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, he tries to stab Diaz, but Diaz just grabs the dagger.
Yeah.
That was a fucking cool thing, because you're really worried. It's like, oh, this motherfucker hasn't killed Diaz, has he?
Yeah. Like earlier there, like, Diaz, he pulled out his sword, or was about to, but then he pulled it back in, because like, no, this guy's an idiot, and everyone talked to him.
Pulling out his sword because he was like, is this guy going to fight me right now? And he's like, no, he's too pathetic, I'm going to talk him out of it.
But then, like, no, he's trying to stab him. You see the gouts of blood coming down. I thought, oh, no, not Diaz. But I'm saying, no, he fucking caught that blade. And then fucking chucks it away.
And now he's just
and
really
now
fucking
he pulls
angry.
Out the sword. And now he's coming for you.
Obviously, the other guys, himself and Diaz, stopped some randos trying to kill some demon kids.
Yeah.
I assume they thought that would please the king or whatever the hell. And they're just like little fucking kids. It's like a little horn kid with a knife or whatever. And those kids show up again later when he's on the run, that fucking cowardly bastard. And he thinks he can talk his way into this kid thing. When, I don't know, just everything about this guy screams to me child murderer at this stage.
Well, I think
he's
completely lost it at this point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But he thinks
I wasn't sure what the hell he was going to try.
I assume he's like thinking, oh, if I save this child, that'll make up for
that's redemption.
Murdering
sure.
that child. But then the child murders him, so he's just turned a child into a murderer instead.
Yeah. Yep, way to go!
And all the viewers who were like hoping Azazel or Gene would kill him were like, nope, not getting any sort of catharsis
random
here.
Bullshit. No, randomness of fucking war, which is kind of like, that's what I mean, like he doesn't fucking deserve any kind of epic death and speech and fucking posturing. He just deserves to fucking rot away, because he's such a shit.
And then the people you wanted to kill him end up killing someone you didn't want them to kill.
Yep! They're giving each other a look as like, let's fuck up the king. And that was pretty great.
With Alistair, you know, he's completely like delusional as well, and saying, I didn't want to do any of this, you know, while he's like running around the ruins of the city where it was being bombed by heaven, like, and it's like, you may not have intended this, but you did precipitate it, so you gotta take responsibility, you jerk.
Yeah. But it's like he's completely, like you said, delusional. He has no. He obviously has shame, but he's trying to disassociate himself from all this shit that he's caused. This is all his fucking fault.
Yeah.
Dear.
So Kaiser gets three of the other guys though, and he's going to try and get to the king by swimming across the bay.
And Rita, like that's dumb.
Rita shows up. So tells
Rita, sorry, not Nina.
Tells him to put his shirt back on.
No, leave it out.
I'll just summon an army of the dead to bring us there. Nothing terrifying about that.
It's like, no, just, there are like civilians and children in that crowd. I'm assuming that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the bodies weren't doing anything. It's like, it's a bit of a waste to just leave them there in the street.
Like, Rita, you can't, like, go from your scene earlier on in a mortuary where you're, like, tenderly caressing Muguro's or El's body, like, you know, lying in state, and then pull this guy's stunt and say you have respect for the dead. I mean, come on.
There's respect for the dead, and there's needing to get shit done, and she's trying to get shit done right now.
A bridge of zombies to get to an airship.
Well, more like a wave of zombies. Like, it made, you know, that fucking, what's that fucking World War Z movie? Like, it made that wave of zombie thing look really fucking good. I guess because they look like more like zombies. They all did the weird kind of shuffle. And they initially thinks they're running at him to get him, because that's what it looks like when a crowd of zombies is sprinting at you. But they all just dive into the bay and form a zombie bridge.
Yeah. The reason to try and get there is because Azazel and Jean are trying to finish off the Onyx Knights and get to the king.
The Onyx Knights are not doing well.
Jean is fucking some people up with that magic spear of hers. She's just like shooting down like entire like airships of that thing. It looks pretty boss actually.
There's several bits in this where there's Onyx Knights on dragons or drakes or whatever just chasing her. There's always like a squad coming after her. It's like, get the saint. And she's wrecking fools.
It's really cool though, because she's flying around shooting people down, and then the Azazel is kind of doing the similar, and then they kind of meet in midair. Then, oh, it's you. Why would you? Combined power attack to take on all of the fleas.
That was pretty sweet, yeah.
So they finish the captain off, and then they're about to kill the king when Kaiser leaps in, takes
Mr.
a bullet.
Mr. President, no.
Just as Nina Favreau, Bacchus, and Hansa arrive, and everyone's like, what the fuck? Everyone's like standing around, wondering what they've done. Rita's the most distraught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the composure just breaks. She just is, and they're like, you know, gasping. Like, idiot, why the hell do you do that? Because it's been hinted at, but I'm pretty confident now after seeing her there, she probably did everything for Kaiser all this time.
Yeah, that seems to be I mean, it's been kind of hinted at in a few other bits as well, like with the restaurant date in one of the prior episodes. And I think that's kind of like where it may make sense from Kaiser's kind of thing, because he's been trying to talk people down on it, and the only thing he can do now is throw himself bodily to try and fucking stop the infighting.
Mm.
And well, the other thing which will stop the infighting is Bahamut shows up.
Is Bahamut showing up? I was going to say, and then Bahamut shows up. And everyone's like, ah, oh, fuck it.
I get why, like, yeah, you did to try and kind of stop it, but it seems like it's too late for that now. Like Kaiser, no, the time for talk
is
kind of
the last thing you can do. Yeah, yeah.
Time for talk is kind of done. The dragons are already loose upon the world. Like, we can't really just like talk that down.
Well,
anymore,
yeah,
can we?
But at the same time, that's what Favreau and Nina and Bacchus and Hansa, because they know what the plan is, and unlike the king, is they're actually going to tell people what the plan is.
See, yeah, again, if he told people what the plan was, I don't know, maybe the demons and fucking the heaven would be on board. They're like, oh, that's a pretty good idea. Maybe we should unite all our armies together in one final confrontation kind of thing. And to not have this fucking sword of Damocles of a giant fucking dragon hanging over our heads. But it's like, no, I'm just not going to tell anyone what I'm doing. Enslave the demons, fucking invade heaven. just piss everybody off.
We also get the old guy complaining that, why do you have to fight on the board of the ship?
Yeah, I'm grown to really love that guy.
Yeah, he's kind of like, oh, these motherfuckers again. And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of witchy there, old guy.
They had a great plan, and it's all gone wrong. It's probably all down to Chariochi that they haven't told people.
Because
he is the king after all, even though he's their puppet king. Really?
Yeah, he's just fulfilling the role of the plan.
Necessarily. Yeah, they did say that they wanted a strong-willed person, because they need a strong-willed person to operate this weapon.
Yeah.
Better way to do this plan, though, guys. I think you could have got everybody to agree on destroying the avatar of all evil.
You could have at least got the vast majority of people to agree. Yeah.
But at the same time, they've got reason not to trust the demons.
Sure.
Considering where they found the information in the first place. And of course, yeah. I won't say too much because Dwayne doesn't watch Genesis yet, so. There is. There's a certain irony in who ends up killing Kaiser, so. Assuming he's dead. Well,
that's true. I'm really hoping it'll somehow pull off a happy ending. I don't fucking see how.
Sticks Rocky back on and turn him into a zombie bridegroom.
Yeah. That's it as well. You know, of all the dismembered hands of you coming across, why do you hold on to that one?
It had special meaning, sure.
It's a memento from her husband, though.
And next week's episode is Run, Nina, Run.
Hmm.
I don't know whether that has any bearing other than somebody likes Run, Lola, Run. Or whether it will have a time-looping thing happening in it. I don't know.
Mm.
Or whether running away from the problem will be solving the problem. Who knows?
Yeah, I imagine we've gotten this far with this fucking plan, and it's all kind of shit. So, you know, and you don't seem in good shape, Chayotra. I'm gonna point a fun, put you off my shoulder and run to the giant hand laser so you can just fulfill this thing. We can all go home and try and pick up the pieces of our shattered lives.
Mm.
Possibly.
Because yeah, the city is pretty much destroyed at this point.
Yeah. I'm glad the fucking the baker and everyone got out of town despite their constant fucking complaints. I was like, no, you didn't want to be in there. That place is fucked now.
A metaphor for the show itself.
Yeah. What do you think of the odds of this thing sticking the landing?
I think it's pretty. I think what it's going for, it will land. Whether people want what it's going for,
sure, yeah, there is that.
It definitely feels like people aren't buying what it's selling. That I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's just been like it's been so light and fluffy for fucking ages of episodes of just fucking around like that. It's gone like whoa, it's gone really dark. Yeah.
Also, but it's not offering. It's not offering the catharsis of people getting their revenge.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels more real for that, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suspect it will be hideously tragic by the end.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't see who... I'm sure people will survive, but I think maybe the ones who are dead are going to be the ones who are better off by the end of this story.
Yeah. I feel like they may actually have got that kind of what they were going for with the first series, to be perfectly honest. And this feels like we already did that kind of thing already. Now we have to surpass it somehow, and this is the only way to do it, by making it more tragic.
Hmm.
Yep.
Again, trying to keep mom there for Dwayne who hasn't seen the first series.
Sorry.
But yeah, I'm sure people will be really annoyed if Nina dies.
I feel like they're nearly
Nina won't die.
I don't know, dude. That would be like the most sucky thing they could do.
Fucking
wonderful character and just go fuck it.
That is true. Yes, they could have Nina die and Chariochi and the Zazzle still be alive at the end.
Oh god.
Well, Chariochi will die because he has a thing on his hand, and that won't come off until he dies.
Well, he could lose his arm.
Mm.
I mean, he's lost an eyeball, why not?
We shall see. Anyway, not long to find out, because it will be airing on Friday and we're recording on Wednesday. So that is everything for this week. So I think we've got no Haybot, we've got no Vatican Miracle Examiner. So mm-hmm. How long is Vatican Miracle Examiner? It is 25 minutes long. And
So you're trying to make a Goma
that's
Chan
five
episode.
Bono Bonos you can put in.
Oh, yeah,
and also there's no Goma Chan, so that's another two Bono Bonos we can fit in. So we can watch
seven
entire...
Bono Bonos.
Seven
Bono 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 Bono.
So, like, I guess, okay, right. So, how about this for a format, right? We do like a Bono Bono, then we do a different episode, then we do a Bono Bono, then we do a different episode.
I think that's a good idea, Dwayne, yes.
Back and forth.
We'll alternate Bono Bonos. I'll figure out how
just so we're not talking about Bono Bono for like fucking half an hour straight or something.
just because, you know, if we should end on one, because if Richard Bachman would
need a
tragic
fucking...
response. Well, that was very sad. Bono, let's go see the lovely cake.
We can end with, yes, and now episode 21 of Bono Bono, a super funny story.
We might need a palate cleanser, all right, yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we can catch a week up with Bono Bono, I think. Mm. Right, I'll figure it all out, I'll stick it in the notes. So be back here next week. If you love Bono Bono, we're going to tease it out to make you stay to the end. If you love Bono Bono, you're probably doing this podcast with us. But
yeah, likely.
Let us know in the comments, send us emails.
Righty-ho, we'll be back next week. But before we do that, what's coming up on The Secret of the Sailor Madness?
What's coming up? Well, school is in for autumn. It's not so bad, because you still have your lunch break. So we'll be talking about Disney's Recess.
Mm-hmm. And on Dynamite in the Brain, you can currently go and listen to me and Anthony preview every single thing which is coming up in the new anime season, plus a few things which aren't. Because they were on the list when I started, and then it turns out when we were doing the episode, one of them will be like, oh, that doesn't appear to be on the list anymore. But we cover it anyway. Apparently not out till spring next year.
Even hypothetical anime will get covered.
Yes. And then after that, there'll be another episode of Man v. Feud. Where we... which episodes do we run down? I can't remember now. I think... Maybe just do have a quick look and check at the old Man v. Feud spreadsheet. So we're going from Lensman to the professional GoGo 13.
Oh, good ones.
And we add a few more things to our list of things to do a podcast about in the future.
Isn't Lensman that thing that's like Green Lantern or something?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Pretty strong influence on it.
But the anime is very much like Star Wars.
Okay.
Which Lensman was an influence on Star Wars, but this has gone very much the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to hear more, listen to that podcast and also listen to the podcast where we reviewed Lensman. There's a lot of things... Your name comes up a lot on that episode now because there's a lot of the things we mentioned, most of them you were on the podcast for.
I'm not saying I'm not consistent.
Yeah, there's one thing there which we have done a podcast on and we sorely regretted it. So check that out and find out about that. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with Let's Go Bono Bono. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.